This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Accelerate your day with today's business headlines with Volvo Cars.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Tan Chung Han, and the top business stories of the day. We look at Khazanah. According to the Business Times Singapore, the offer of resignation by the board of Khazanah has started a conversation around succession. Mm. And several names have emerged to replace Tan Sri Azman Mokhtar as the chairman of Khazanah Nasional. Now, one of the leading candidates, apparently in a story that was that came out just today, this morning, just a couple of hours ago, is a Malaysian banker and a Deutsche Bank Malaysia chief executive, Yusuf Anwar Yaakob. He's just one of many names that have been bandied out since the news of this offer of resignation.
Yeah, that's right. So again, this story just coming out just a couple hours ago. So that name there, Yusuf Yaakob, joining the ranks of, Chairman Mokhzani, who is currently heading MIDF. His name has reportedly been thrown into the mix as well. You've got the likes of current CIMB Group CEO, Tengku Dato Sri Zafrul Aziz. His name was bandied about as well, but he has since clarified that he has not been approached by the new government to take up the top job at Khazanah. And that's in today's Edge Financial Daily.
Maybe we could give you some background on Yusuf Yaakob. He, prior to joining Deutsche Bank in 2014, he was a chartered accountant. He is a chartered accountant by profession. He was managing director and chairman of the investment banking division of Goldman Sachs Malaysia. And he was also CFO of Axiata.
Yeah, you know, so again, just going through the list here, Maybank's Abdul Farid Alias is in the mix, other candidates including Muhammad Zafir, Muhammad Hashim. So yeah, plenty of purported suitors there for the role of leading Khazanah, taking over Tan Sri Azman.
Okay, so what we know is Azman Mokhtar has not left the building yet. He's only offered to resign as... Yep. Have all the members of the board. Mm-hmm. So there's the board, of course, there's the management team, which Azman Mokhtar leads. And there's no sense that the management team or any of those individuals have offered to resign. So that's pretty stable at the moment, at least from what we know.
Right.
Right.
So the bigger picture here is about Khazanah's mandate moving forward, right? Because it has drawn criticism from the current prime minister. He says they're up to funny business. And he talks about how Khazanah has deviated from their original mandate. And that has raised plenty of eyebrows within the domestic financial sector, because as best as we know, to the best of our knowledge, Khazanah did not have a mandate of boosting Bumiputra participation in the domestic economy. That was under the purview of PNB.
But it must be said, though, the Khazanah's role has evolved over time. I referred to a piece in today's paper in Star Biz, Financial Cloud in PM's Hand is the headline. But what the article by T. Lin Say and To Ka In do is they tell you how Khazanah has changed in its role. So it started off as a strategic investor, according to this article. It then became a GLC transformation. That was its main mandate, and it's now become an investment holding company. That's according to their narrative of the transformation of Khazanah and its role.
Right, sure. And look, even Keitat over there at The Edge as well has written this a few weeks back in The Edge Weekly, talking about the remaking of GLCs and Khazanah's role in that process as well. But again, so now you've got under the prime ministership of Tun Dr. Mahathir, right? You know, he's not holding back when it comes to his jabs at Khazanah. I mean, there are even reports of him stonewalling Tan Sri Azman, not allowing him, the head of the sovereign wealth fund or this strategic wealth fund, to have the time of day with him. And so now you've got the resignation en masse by
the offer to resign.
Okay, yeah. Fine. Undated. Okay. So, well, the option is on the table, right? So the option is there to clean house, right? So you ask yourself then, why is this best practice? And what happens to Khazanah, you know, moving forward? Keeping in mind, they've got substantial stakes in not just domestic equities, but also investments around the world.
Well, interesting enough, the New Straits Times had an article titled, "Resignation of Board Members Unlikely to Impact Equity Market." And this is... you know, I believe a quote from Dr. Nazri Khan, Adam Khan, of Hermana Capital.
Yeah, so that's near term, right? Long term, what's Khazanah's role going to be? You know, and later on, Pressing Matters, the show that goes beyond the headlines, after the 9:30 a.m. news bulletin, we'll be speaking to an independent business analyst, P. Gunasegaran, about his thoughts on the matter. And one of the thoughts that he has actually written about was that perhaps the divestment or the complete privatization of all of Khazanah's assets right now. And so, again,
but that's a possibility.
Right, it is a possibility. You know, whatever it is, the big question marks here about how this leadership transition is being handled and Khazanah's mandate moving forward. Speaking about Khazanah's mandate and speaking about Straits Times, there was this story that came out over the weekend, right, involving Operation Twist. Sharad Kutin, do the honor.
Not Chubby Checker. Not Chubby Checker. Okay. It's not a song. This has got to do, again, it's about, you know, the decision of what to do next, right? I mean, this is why they had to call it Operation Twist. It sounds like some nefarious secret mission. But yeah, the NST also has this. And the question is not just of what the Operation Twist was about, but who was behind it. So there's this story about banker Lukman Philip Vassar Arnold, who apparently was behind this. Lukman was also known as Lucky.
Okay, look, the headline that the Straits Times carries for this original article is, and let me read this, "Secret investments by Khazanah come under Malaysian government scrutiny." And when I read through the article, yeah, you would think that there's something nefarious at work here, you know, something really sinister, but really it was a stake, a 3 billion ringgit stake in UBS back in about 2008. Now, when I did a bit more digging, it's not just Khazanah who went in. You've got the Singapore's government investment company who went in as well. Actually, they sealed their deal about December of 2007 or so. And keep in mind, back then, UBS shares, and we're talking about a stake in UBS, the Swiss bank, their shares were rallying, okay, in 2007. Then there was 2008, right? There was this huge drop-off, obviously, because of the GFC. And judging by the timeline reported in the story, that's when Khazanah went in. After that, Lehman Brothers fell, right? Lehman Brothers filed for bankruptcy, and that's where the 3 billion ringgit investment by Khazanah went sour.
Because it was held by Lehman Brothers.
Right,
because
it was held by Lehman Brothers, and they were only trying to recuperate, they were only able to recuperate about 50% of it, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, so this comes back to the way these institutions operate, right? And in a story with the New Straits Times, Sunway University Business School Economics Professor Dr. Ye Kim Leng talks about the global trend. What is the global trend? The worldwide trend is apparently greater transparency and scrutiny over sovereign wealth fund activities. And, you know, Singapore perhaps not the yardstick we necessarily want to follow, because I'm not quite sure how transparent Temasek Holdings and such are. But if you look at, say, it's the oil fund, the Norwegian oil fund, they're very transparent. They're very clear set of priorities, what they can and cannot invest in. And all that is public knowledge and part of a political debate about how do you make best use of, you know, the wealth of the nation, as it were.
Right. And now, to be fair to Khazanah, well, I guess they fall somewhere within that spectrum, right? They have been publishing their annual reports since 2013. At least that's what's been reported. This is all before 1NDB broke out. Obviously, way 5 years before this story is coming to light now, this Operation Twist story. So there have been efforts made by Khazanah and also other GLCs here in Malaysia to ramp up their level of transparency. Again, obviously, as we have found out over the last couple of months, a lot more could have been done on that front. But for Khazanah specifically, I don't think this deal was something unusual. There were many people who got burned in that deal. I'm looking at headlines. Even Credit Suisse is only now, here, June, July 2018, trying to reach a settlement because of their dealings in derivatives with Lehman Brothers. So it was a huge fallout. Khazanah got their hands burned. Many other wealth funds funds and banks and other funds around the world got burned. I guess this is making headlines now because of the leadership turmoil and the questions over Khazanah's mandate that we've been dealing with over the last few weeks.
Now, according to Finance Minister Lim Guan Eng, 1MDB's Ai Itam land in Penang has been quietly sold to a Chinese-based firm despite a freeze imposed by the Penang state government. According to the Finance Minister, the 234 acres land was sold to Silk Road Southeast Asia Real Estate for about 2.7 billion ringgit in August of 2017, that's last year, netting a profit on disposal of some 1.32 billion ringgit. The original price of the land was 1.38 billion ringgit. Now, the disposal was carried out by the 1MDB's unit, My City Ventures, Sendirian Berhad. Lim Guan Eng said that although the full proceeds from the disposal have been received by the Ministry of Finance, the Minister of Finance, the transfer of shares to Silk Road has yet to be completed. Now, this strikes one is somewhat anomalous. And according to sources at the Edge Financial Daily, back then, Silk Road did ask for a transfer title, but there's been no follow-up since. And the transactions look like a money laundering, as the Chinese buyer did not subsequently seek the transfer of shares.
Yeah, so essentially you've got 2.7 billion ringgit exchanging hands, but not the actual title for the land. I think that's where the question mark is. So what were they actually paying for, right? If it's not the land, then could it be money laundering? So that's on the front page of today's Edge Financial Daily. Look, the Ministry of Finance has been inundated with all kinds of scandals, not just linked to 1MDB, but, you know, linked to the previous administration. We know of those red files that he has uncovered, and they're trying to comb through, and looks like you know, what's being reported here is yet another scandal that is linked to not just 1MDB but also to the prior administration.
Yeah. I think there's the forensics that are happening, forensic auditing that's happening in many ministries as part of the course. I mean, we're only 2 months into this new administration, so that's kind of expected. Holding people accountable for their actions, I think, is the other dimension to that, and also asset recovery. Because if this government is concerned about the level of debt and also wants to fund the next budget, they could do well by having some of those monies returned to them. Though I know and I expect that in many of the legal cases involving criminal charges, it's a long haul. You know, they're not going to get the money back very soon. They're not going to go straight into the public coffers, but nevertheless, I guess getting those things moving is very important.
Yeah. Now, another similarity between this land deal with other fund flows tied to 1MDB is that it crosses several geographical locations. So if you read this story in the Edge Financial Daily, it has ties to the gas pipeline project over there in Sabah, that 9.4 billion ringgit gas pipeline project involving Suria Strategic Energy Resources. It involves China Exim Bank. The money apparently then traveled to the Middle East and then coming back to Malaysia to be transacted for the land, 2.7 billion ringgit. But again, no follow-up on the request for the transfer of shares. So there is an international element to this story as well. But then going back to your point here, Sharon, about the complexities of, you know, uncovering such or unraveling such scandals, right? It's because, there's no money trail evidence apparently for this deal. So this is according to a source quoted by the Edge Financial Daily, and I quote, "There is no money trail evidence in China, but it is quite obvious," and in brackets, "that it is money laundering." So, you know, the current administration will then have to prove these allegations here.
Now, at the heart of the story is that unit we mentioned earlier, My City Ventures. Just to give you a sense of the stakeholders in the story, and now My City Ventures was set up in March of 2013. Former 1MDB Chief Financial Officer Azmi Tahir and Chen Kai Hong were named as directors. For the financial year ending March 2017, the company posted a net profit of 18,000 ringgit with zero revenue. Its total assets dropped from about 1.07 billion ringgit in the financial year 2015 to 138,000 ringgit in 2017. That's a 99% drop.
Right. By all accounts, it looks like it's a shell company of sorts. So again, we'll have to wait and see yet another chapter to follow in the pursuit of more transparency from the previous government's dealings there. And it's, speaking of, so it's not just this Penang land deal. In the Edge Weekly, the latest edition of the Edge Weekly, apparently there's a host of dubious or suspicious land transactions involving DBKL. 64 parcels of land, and that apparently is just the tip of the iceberg. That's the phrase used in the Edge Weekly story. Those 64 parcels of DBKL land covered more than 400 acres of land, 424 acres of land. That was what was reported. But it could be higher. It could be up to 90 plots of land, I believe. Yeah,
that's according to the Federal Territories Minister. I mean, these individuals who are now leading the ministry must be inundated. I don't know if they have any time to sleep because it's extraordinary what they're having to uncover and with such consequences for the public purse, right? Add also the design of our cities and, you know, what kind of decisions were being made based on vested interests in terms of, you know, resource allocation, as well as how, you know, and where buildings were built and so on and so forth. I mean, it's just quite astounding when you look at exactly the situation here. But I do think that there are individuals, like we have Kapong MP Lim Lip Eng. He says that he had heard that the bidding for these parcels of land happened through WhatsApp.
Right. So there wasn't an open tender. You know, there's also allegations that certain connected parties got some really juicy deals in terms of, you know, how they got some of those 64 parcels of land or 90 plots of land. You know, so yeah, serious questions here, and looks like the MACC will certainly be kept busy. I mean, hey, you know, given the tone set by the current Prime Minister saying that, hey, if there are 36 hours in a day, he'll work 36 hours. So MACC, you got your work cut out for you, buddies. You've got to earn your paycheck, people.
I'm sure they have been all these years. Yes. As well. Okay, you can always join this conversation. Remember, you can tweet us at BFM Radio. We're coming up to the top of the hour. We'll be back with the opening numbers on the stock market. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Fuel your business drive with the Volvo S90 T8 twin engine. So cost efficient, it makes good business sense. Volvo, made by Sweden.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.